out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 25th of April, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Today, I am pleased to announce we have a guest that we've never had on the Daily Nationalist before, and the guest is the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Nice to make my debut on this particular show.
Yeah, well, it's normally live, but we're pre-recording this one about an hour before it's actually going to go out live, and we normally just look at what's going on in the news and give a pro-white perspective on it. And today I thought what we could have a look at is all what's going on with the government at the moment about the Windrush generation, that they call them. And basically what's happened is the government has tried to get tough on immigration, and they've decided that anyone without any papers, anyone who cannot prove they are a citizen of Britain, needs to be deported, which is quite right too. If they don't have any papers, then obviously they're here illegally. I mean, that's what you would think. That's just common sense. And what's happened is they've now got lots of Negroes in the main, Caribbean Negroes, claiming that they've actually been here for 50 years, or they've been here since the Windrush first docked, and they are the descendants of these Windrush immigrants, and they have a right to be here. And they don't have a right to be here, though, because they don't have any papers. Instead of saying, well, it's your fault, you don't have any papers, you can't prove that you belong here, they are now saying they're going to offer them compensation. There are calls for members of parliament to resign. They're saying that they're going to pay for all of these useless dross from the third world. Basically, they're going to pay for them all to have lawyers so that they can apply for citizenship. And it's a massive fuss being created about this. And there could be people that lose their jobs. And now we've got Boris Johnson saying that he wants to give amnesty to all illegal immigrants. It's a right state of affairs, and you've linked me to a site on the Occidental Observer, which deals with the origins of the Windrush in the first place, which is very interesting. I mean, the Windrush was a ship. It was originally taken from the Germans after the war, and used by the British, or so we think it's by the thought it was by the British. It was actually by the Jews, as we'll learn in a minute. And it basically stocked itself up with all of these Negroes from Jamaica and just brought them to Britain and dropped them off on the shores of Britain for us to look after. What are your, before we go into it, Dennis, have you heard about this news story? Have you got any thoughts on it?
Well, I hadn't actually, but it doesn't surprise me. I watched the Parliament last week when I think it was the Home Office kind of roasting of this black guy, and it just seemed really peculiar that all these white women and white fellas on one side were getting roasted by this black guy for incompetence about this Windrush thing. But it was like a domineering roasting, and so whatever followed that didn't really surprise me.
Yeah, that would have been David Lammy. I mean, that's the only time he ever does get excited is if he's advocating for his fellow blacks. I mean, you won't see him ever advocating for whites or saying anything to our benefit. I thought that was the main part of the story. And it's really been, it just really gets my goat that they're just bending over backwards for these people. They're making them out to be saints. You know, they're making them out to be absolute heroes. Apparently they had during the Olympics, when we had the Olympics here a while back, during the opening ceremony, that they had a mock-up of the Windrush, of this boat, you know, it's held by the establishment as if it's this wonderful thing, bringing peace to our land, or, you know, bringing these wonderful people here, these wonderful engineers, rocket scientists. And of course, we're told that they were here to do jobs that needed doing after the war, all those jobs.
That's the excuse, yeah.
Yeah, or jobs that we didn't want to do. So what, were they toilet cleaners? Shit shovelers? What were they doing? Well, what they were basically mainly doing is claiming dole money. Yeah. Well, let's have a look at these quotes. And this is from the Occidental Observer. I believe it's Andrew Joyce that's done the research. And this is the first quote. For all intents and purposes, the Empire Windrush was passed into Jewish ownership by a Jewish secretary for war, given the green light to boost profits and start bringing non-whites to Britain by a Jewish minister for transport, and provided with armies of eager passengers by a Jewish-owned media. That's a Jewish-owned media in Jamaica. Despite these facts, a very different narrative emerged in the aftermath of the ship's arrival. Pollard writes that in the years since the arrival of the Empire Windrush, a myth has taken hold that the British government was responsible for bringing the passengers over as part of a concerted plan to help overcome a labour shortage. But this is wrong. It is clear from the reaction of ministers that they were as surprised as the public when they first learned via a telegram from the acting governor of Jamaica on May the 11th what was about to happen. The myth was a helpful one because it acknowledged the undemocratic nature of the event while deflecting blame away from the most obvious source of the scourge, the Jews of the shipping industry and the Ministry of Transport. It is an interesting fact that with the relevant contracts assigned and the process underway, Harry Nathan, this is the guy responsible for it, quietly vacated his position on May the 31st. Astonishingly, since that date, Nathan has eluded all scholarly and journalistic attention until my own investigation. So what that is saying there is we had a Jewish secretary for war and a Jewish minister for transport. The ship itself that was taken from the Germans was given to these Jewish ministers who sold it to Jewish owners, who then got in touch with the Jamaicans, and they owned the Jamaican media, and they advertised.
Yeah.
Advertised for them all to fill up the ship and come to Britain. So it was a total Jewish conspiracy right from the very start.
Yeah, and it went through New Zealand as well. The Jewish firms down there.
So they were picking up Pacific Islanders as well, were they?
Well, I think the whole operation was run from New Zealand. I think the Windrush boat was owned by Jews down in New Zealand.
Well, it says that they went to Pakistan, they brought Indians over, they brought Pakistanis over, they brought Caribbean Negroes over. They just went out looking around the Third World or around the former British Empire to invade and flood Britain with them.
Well, remember when we did the part of the documentary I'm currently on, and we talked about the Privy Council in 1919 being totally Jewish?
Yeah.
Well, this is where it all stems from. Now control Britain. They're dwelling with the elite. They call it the cousinhood. And obviously, they pull the strings now.
For listeners that haven't checked that out, me and Dennis do a program, Truth Without Radio, on Fridays, where we go into his work. And yeah, so this is logically what happened after the Privy Council. I mean, you identified the fact that the whole of the Privy Council was made up by Jews, and and at the Versailles Treaty, every country in the world that was represented at the Versailles Treaty, or pretty much every country, had a Jew as an advisor. 117
Jews.
So it's all being controlled by them, and obviously after the war, they were running things, and the British government really didn't have any idea that this is what was going on, and they just went along with it.
Well, the elites went into, as I said, I think they call it the cousinhood, where the elites and the Jews get on famously. All the wealth that the East Indies Company plundered around the world all went back to the elites and the Jews of Britain, and us working class people received barely handouts.
Well, yeah, the cousinhood were, they were all related as well. These Jews were all related to one another. So it wasn't just the fact that they were Jewish, but, you know, you had, they were all cousins. So you had a cousin was the minister of this, a cousin was the minister of that, and then a cousin was running the newspapers, and a cousin was running the shipping.
Job for the boys, discreetly.
And all this is supposed to be a conspiracy when we say that, you know, they work together to the benefits of their own people and to the detriment of others. And this is exactly what's going on here.
Here's the proof, yeah.
Moving on from that quote, this is the second quote. The Labour government fumbled in the aftermath of the arrival of the Empire Windrush, clinging to the fantasy that upholding the tradition that members of the colony should be freely admissible to the United Kingdom could act as a means of holding the crumbling empire together. Part of the cabinet's strict adherence to this established but previously superfluous protocol may also have been influenced by the interpretation of existing immigration law presented to them. And guess who it was presenting the existing immigration law to them? The responsibility for interpreting existing law for the Crown and the Cabinet lies with the Solicitor General, a role that has been occupied since 1945 by yet another Jew, Frank Soskis. As I noted in a previous essay, Soskis would later introduce Britain's first legislation containing a provision prohibiting group libel. Soskis was the son of a Russian Jewish revolutionary exile. It was Soskis who drew up the legislation and piloted the first Race Relations Act 1965 through Parliament. And the act aimed to outlaw racial discrimination in public places. I mean, there's lots in that. So they suggested that this was a means of keeping the British Empire, was to allow the country to be flooded by non-whites.
Well, again, we discussed that the other week, didn't we? We said they didn't really lose the empire because they all had central banks. So every nation was still controlled by central banking.
And still controlled by the Jews. So they just lost the name of the British Empire because it wasn't really, really British in the first place. It's interesting that, I guess that the Solicitor General is probably still occupied by a Jew. They are.
I don't see why not.
Yeah, they're very overrepresented in the Justice Department.
Well, what are they? What 1% still of the nation? Are they? I don't think they're much more, are they, the Jews?
Yeah, less than 1%. Less than 1%. But I mean, this Solicitor General, he was the guy that wrote up this first legislation against group libel. That's obviously where they. You know, that's only to benefit the Jews, isn't it?
Well, I've forgotten all about the Race Relations Act. I didn't realise at the time when it was. I mean, I wasn't into all this kind of thing. But then when I've researched now what happened in the Soviet Union and how they clamped down on free speech, now they brought this Race Relations Act, which they're saying is aimed to outlaw racial discrimination. No, what it's aimed to do is to shut people up.
Well, this is in a public place as well. It does away with the freedom of association. Freedom of association means that you are free to employ who you like. You're free to live next to who you like. You are free to sell whatever you like to who you like. And the Race Relations Act did away with all that. Suddenly, you couldn't say, I don't want to sell to blacks. I don't want to employ blacks. I only want to live next to white people. You were banned from doing that. And that is freedom of association, which is a human right, apparently. But it's not a human right if you're a white guy. If you're a white man and you want to associate with white people, you're not allowed to.
That's racist.
Yeah, well, people don't understand that. They think, oh, freedom of association. Yeah, I'm free. I can talk to whoever I like. Mm. But it's much more important than that. And obviously the criticism as well. Nobody can criticize non-whites because that's racist. And this was the start of it. Since then, they've pushed a lot more through. Did you hear the other day? They're now going to be having a Stephen Lawrence Day every year.
Do you know, I heard something about that. Yeah, amazing, that, isn't it?
It's incredible. Stephen Lawrence.
What they're making icons of these people. which is in a sense is a brainwashing technique, because you know you're going to see these tributes to them, and it's going to be influential on people.
Well, that is just it, isn't it? It's the same thing by them. You know, I think they put a statue up or something as well of Stephen Lawrence, and they're having a special day dedicated to him. Everybody's heard of Stephen Lawrence. It's the same with the Windrush. They're making out this Windrush generation was so special. They did so much for Britain. It's all a load of nonsense. I mean, how many white people have been killed by blacks? Where's the Drummer Lee Rigby Day? Where's the statue of Drummer Lee Rigby?
You know, it's never not mentioned, is it?
No. It's all supposed to, it's all just about attacking the white man and elevating the non-whites. And it's always Jews that are behind this. And this is the thing. We've discussed many times that, you know, people mainly see the problems that the Muslims cause, and they don't see the problems that the Jews cause. And it's the Jews that are behind all of this.
Well, that's really because they're so adept at, you know, the Jews change their names. You know, they're going to Ireland, you know, the following week they're called O'Donnell, where, you know, the Muslims stick to Muhammad and everybody else. Very crafty, very, very crafty, and very adept at infiltrating.
Well, they use the Muslims and the other non-whites as their shock troops. I mean, this reminds me of... slavery in America, which we know was also run by the Jews, and they would go to Africa, they would buy black slaves from black tribesmen, and then bring them back to America, in the knowledge that the white man was going to be altruistic and wasn't likely to send them back, and they knew what was going to happen, and they advocated for freedom. They advocated for freedom of the slaves then, knowing that, you know, if you've got two different races within one territory, unless you have some very, very strict laws, such as execution for interbreeding, that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be miscegenation. They knew this.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were doing the same. They did the same to America, and then they saw their chance that they could do the same thing to Britain with this Windrush scam. Apparently, the boat itself was supposed to be used for bringing supplies, and somebody said to them, well, you might as well pick up some passengers and bring them across. And that was it. There was no concerted plan. Oh, we need people to do jobs that the British people won't do. I mean, that's such a strange thing to say after the war. I mean,
I've always thought that, yeah, because normally employment's hard to find after the war, so why bring in more? I mean, it's only 3 years after the war, this. I think were there 417 on that first trip?
Yeah, it wasn't much. At first, it was about 500 on the first trip, and I believe then they said something like 2,000 a year. And you compare that to now. I mean, what is it now, 200,000 a year?
Well, there was a speech thing on TV the other night, and then all these people in this hall, which is now a multicultural hall, where this is the same place where Enoch Powell gave his speech, and they were all sat there watching a recording, and it was fascinating. It really was fascinating, because they felt that Britain had been enhanced by all this. Well, they would do, wouldn't they, because they were all black.
Well, yeah, this is it. They will ask non-whites about this, but I don't see how we've been enhanced by people with a low IQ that can hardly string two words together. The people that have been affected by this, that they've shown on the news, you know, they've been dreadful examples of humanity. And if they genuinely have been here all that time, and in all that time they haven't thought, well, maybe I should apply for citizenship. Maybe I should get some document to prove that I've actually been here. And again, this opens up this question of why should people be entitled to citizenship just because they've been living in this country for a certain while? It's like saying squatters should be entitled to get the deeds of the house if they've been squatting in a house for a certain amount of time.
That's right, yeah. You've got to notice also the prison population. I have a feeling today, not that I've ever been to prison, but I've got a feeling that the Muslims are dominating there in the prisons as well.
Well, they are. They are. And again, they'll probably say that that's Islamophobia. The same as they say it's racism that's got all the blacks in prison. Don't forget this David Lammy report last year that Theresa May commissioned him to do, which is supposedly to look at unequal outcomes in society. And of course, because blacks have a lower IQ and they're more prone to crime, they have a higher unemployment rate and there's far more of them in prison. And they're saying, well, that's down to racism. That's down to racism. And of course, he didn't think to go and check out any of the countries in Africa and see if there was a high unemployment rate there or whether there were lots of blacks in prison there. But they're just blaming white people for it.
Interesting enough, I saw another program a couple of weeks ago about the flats and, you know, the hamlets in London. And this woman who was, I think she was an MP, I'm not too sure, but anyway, white, she went out at night with a TV camera to, and there were gangs, a particular gang of girls, blacks, and she was talking to them. And then all of a sudden, there was another group of black lads further down the street. And before you knew it, the girls went off to fight these black lads. It's incredible. So consequently, you take away the cameras and you go back to normal life. If me and you walk down that street at a certain time, you'd even have a problem from the women.
Well, it's just tribal warfare, isn't it? And these Negresses are as bad as the Negroes. Well, we've got another quote here. Over the course of the following decade, this is after this first arrival of them, black immigration to Britain increased dramatically. Between 1948 and 1952, between around 2,000 blacks entered Britain each year. By 1957, the figure had climbed to 42,000. Government investigations into this new population revealed that the idea that blacks were helping to fill a labour shortage was grossly ill-founded. In one report completed in December 1953, remember this is a report compiled for the government, civil servants stated that the new population found it difficult to secure employment, not because of prejudice among whites, but because the newcomers had low output and their working life was marked by irresponsibility, quarrelsomeness, and lack of discipline. Black women were slow mentally, and black men were more volatile in temperament than white workers, more easily provoked to violence, lacking in stamina, and generally not up to the standards required by British employers. So the government had a report that actually told the truth, and yet they still went along with this nonsense that it was racism that was causing all the problems.
Any normal government would have looked at that as a red flag and said, well, we don't need all this. But because it's an agenda, obviously, carry on, boys.
Well, what can they possibly bring to this country that we don't have? I mean, what's food, is it? Is it some kind of chicken?
No,
special kind
nation.
Of chicken? Oh, it's just destroying the nation. I mean, don't forget, London used to be 100% white, and now it's only 40% white. They drove out all the white residents London. And again, this was spurred on by Jews in the property business. What they would do is they would buy up a property and then they would move a load of Negroes into it. And they'd encourage the Negroes to sell drugs and pimp. There was a much higher than you would expect number of Negroes that were jailed for pimping. And they were pimping white girls. And who wants to live on a street where you've got a load of blacks playing music all night, selling drugs and pimping white women? So people would move out, and the price on the houses, that would drop, and the Jewish property developer would buy up all the houses and then rent them out to more blacks. So this is the way that they worked. It's the same in New York with the Jewish slumlords that own those buildings. Yeah, it's the same thing that they've done all around the world. And the other thing is, we could see that the British public could see the troubles that were going on in America. I mean, Enoch Powell mentioned this in his famous speech, that we could see the troubles that come from having blacks living among whites in America. And America really couldn't do much about that because, you know, she already had all these Negroes there that the Jews had brought over during the slave trade. But we had no need whatsoever to have blacks here. I mean, we could see the problems that they bring just by looking at America. And yet somehow we were conned into doing it. And this is the reason why, isn't it? It's all these Jews that were in the important positions.
Yeah, there's a line there, and all from Churchill, apparently, so it said, Churchill could see the danger of bringing all these blacks over. But Churchill's been double talk all through his life. I mean, by the fact that he went to Switzerland in 1946 to Zurich and gave a speech praising Kalergi. I mean, Kalergi's old stance is about race mixing Europe. So it's Churchill knew, and yet, you know, for some reason, like, he's being covered in some way, like, to keep him away from it. But he wouldn't know, there's no doubt he wouldn't, you know, he knew. Simple.
Well, we know about the Kudinov-Kalergi plan. I mean, that was pre-World War II, wasn't it, that they wanted to fill Europe with it. Well, they started doing it in Germany, didn't they, in the Rhineland.
In the Rhineland, yeah.
Moving the Negroes in there, and then they were moving them into France. But what I would like to know is, you know, if the same thing happened in other countries in Europe, I mean, what happened in Denmark? What happened in Sweden? Do they all have their own versions of this?
Well, they do. I mean, Sweden has been under the cosh for quite some time, hasn't it? Because particularly targeted, because they are the land of the blonde and blue-eyed, you know, I mean, if you were to form an ABBA band today in Sweden, they'd all be wearing all these masks on their heads.
But, you know, it can't be a coincidence that it was the Jews that brought the blacks to America, and it's the Jews that brought the blacks to Britain 200, 300 years later. You know, I don't know if there was a concerted plan among them or whether it was just groupthink.
Well, can I just say, this Kalergi plan, which was mixing, obviously, Europe, he was a Freemason. The Freemasons, I think there was a newspaper, can't quite recall its name now, it was a Masonic newspaper, absolutely loved it. And when he was chased out of Europe, he managed to escape the Germans in France and in Czechoslovakia. He went to America. He wrote an article again in the Masonic newspaper over in America, which Truman read, and then Truman liked what he saw and implemented the same in America as we have over here, to race mix the white race.
So Truman was behind it as well. Wasn't he the one that spoke up positively about Hitler at some point, or am I thinking of Patton?
No, I'm thinking of Patton. Patton got to Berlin and just saw what Germany would be fighting. But no, I think when you're saying, like, was it a conspiracy, it was a Masonic embracement of it, of the Kalergi plan. So that goes worldwide there, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that provides a link. I think there's also a biological drive among the Jews. They just always seem to do what's going to be harmful to white people. I'm not.
They hate the white race, yeah.
So yeah,
obviously, to mix it up, it's a great thing for them, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's conscious or, you know, I certainly don't think they sit around all together planning these things, but they just seem to go along with them.
I think what's really weird about that race is, if you call it a race, is that they all seem to instinctively know what the goal is without being, I mean, like, if we had an agenda, we'd all have to go to a meeting and take it all in and study. But they seem to have an inbuilt thing that the Jews are meant to, you know, from the off, rule the world. We're the chosen people. It's just automatic to them. And so this corrupt thought, which they wake up with every day, of ways of destroying us, is just natural.
It's like a natural instinct, instinctive behaviour. You know,
like a virus would do.
Yeah. It's like the fable about the scorpion and the frog. You know, it's just in the scorpion's nature to sting the frog. It's just in the Jew's nature to do this to white people. And they saw a chance and they did. The Windrush was originally one of the pleasure cruisers for the National Socialists through the Strength Through Joy program. And the Germans would, you know, they'd be given free trips on this for working hard.
Which
they wouldn't let dock in Britain, because they didn't want the British workers to see how well the German workers were treated. And then it was used to punish us for fighting against Germany, wasn't it, really? I mean, we went to war against Germany, and we thought we'd, you know, we got one over on them by stealing their ship from them. And then the Jews took hold of it and flooded us full of Negroes. And now we've been paid back for going to war. This is the result of going to war against your brothers. Your own land will be flooded with savages.
Yeah.
And your race will be wiped out.
I think it's a bit like in France as well, because like I said earlier on about the ordinary English never really benefited from this this empire, not British as you say, but Jewish Anglo elite. Like when France, the Vichy government, you know, agreed to Germany not to cause any problems, like, and Churchill sunk the navy straight away, no care for the ordinary French people, because obviously at that time France is Masonic as well. So consequently, it's a Masonic war against Germany, because America's Masonic.
I'd like to know what happened to these other ships, whether they were used for a similar purpose. If they were used for a similar purpose, then, you know, that does tend to prove that there was a conspiracy behind this to use them to flood Europe.
Well, after World War One, the Germans sunk the ships, scuttled them, because they didn't want the British to get them. World War Two, I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, I know that there's a lot of anger about the way that the government are just bending over backwards for these Negroes, demanding to be given citizenship when they haven't even got any papers. But it's definitely an interesting story to delve into, especially the Jewish role in it. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.